This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Emmanuel Macron wants to push for a multilingual world. He doesn't want everyone just to speak French. He wants everyone to speak several languages.
That's reporter Catherine Fields in Paris. We'll have full details on the story coming up. Also, more than a million people are displaced due to conflict in the Kasai province of the DRC. And Malawi is rolling out a new community-based strategy to increase women's representation in the 2019 elections. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, conflict in the Kasai province of the Democratic Republic of Congo has displaced more than a million people. The situation is just one facet of growing humanitarian crisis in the country. VOA's Anita Powell traveled with the World Food Program and UNICEF to several locations in troubled Kasai province and brings us this report from residents who say conflict has torn their lives apart.
Georgette's limbs shake as her mother hands her to nurses at a roadside clinic in the town of Kananga. She is severely malnourished, nurses say, and weighs less than 7 kilograms, far less than an average child of 14 months. Seeking comfort, she sucks insistently on her mother's breast, which is dry of milk. 32-year-old Suzanne Lukaji says she, too, has had little to eat since the family fled their home last year, abandoning their crops, after local militia clashed with government forces. The family was forced to survive on what they could forage in the wild bush. Georgette is one of the smallest victims of a massive, complicated crisis that has enveloped a region of Congo the size of Germany. This week, the United Nations top humanitarian official warned that 13 million people need aid in Congo, including 2 million children already experiencing severe acute malnutrition. For Georgette's mother, the narrative is far simpler. We fled into the bush, she said. She got sick. She couldn't eat. She had a cough. We were in the bush for 6 months. In the last year, the United Nations Children's Fund and other aid groups have treated more than 50,000 children in this lush but impoverished region of South Central Congo. UN agencies have asked for an unprecedented $1.7 billion for Congo, most of it for this region. But they have received but a tiny fraction of that from donors. Oscar Butragueño is UNICEF's emergency coordinator for the Kasai region.
We estimate that 850,000 children were affected. So it's been very serious. A lot of people are still displaced. They cannot go back to their homes. They couldn't go and do the planting season. They're hungry, they're in need, and they're desperate.
This region has never been well off. Even before the crisis, aid officials estimated that more than half of the children in this part of Congo were chronically malnourished. A conflict that started in 2016 between an armed militia and the Congolese army, both of which are accused of committing heinous crimes, has pushed an already vulnerable population over the edge. At a WFP food distribution site in the remote village of Shikula, residents scrambled for meager portions of maize meal, beans, oil, and salt. The rations may save lives, but local schoolteacher Jean-Pierre Ngalamalume says everyone is suffering. With students in a state of weakness, he says, we are teaching them, but it's hard for them to follow. Even the teachers aren't in the mood to teach, because they have empty stomachs. UNICEF warns that as many as 400,000 children under the age of 5 could die this year from acute malnutrition unless the agency gets the funds and the access to help. It's a difficult number to imagine, but for many of the mothers who lined up patiently to have their babies seen and treated at a UNICEF-run clinic, those numbers mean little. What matters, they say, are children like 14-month-old Georgette. Their stick-thin limbs and distended bellies can be treated, nurses and aid workers say, but their future is uncertain if the violence flares up again. Anita Powell, VOA News, Kananga, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Fr- French President Emmanuel Macron is promoting the French language regrowth, especially in the fast-growing former French colonies in Africa. Macron has outlined his push on International Francophonie Day, saying he wants to turn French into Africa's premier language. The International Francophonie Organization says the number of French speakers is expected to triple to 700 million by 2050, with 80% of them in Africa. Not everyone supports Macron's effort, with critics seeing it as neocolonialism. VOA's Paul Alexander talks with Catherine Field in Paris.
Emmanuel Macron wants to push for a multilingual world. He doesn't want everyone just to speak French. He wants everyone to speak several languages. But he also feels that French has sort of got pushed aside over the last few decades. People have forgotten that it's not just speaking French. It's part of a history of Europe. It's part of culture. It's part of literature. Everything is in French. And he feels that now is the time, particularly with real population growth, particularly in Africa, that now is the time to grasp that nettle and say, okay, we're going to show you French. We're going to teach you French. And behind that door, you will find a world which you've never seen before, which is French culture.
So are there concrete advantages to do this?
He's going to unveil three particular areas that he wants to see pushed ahead on. One is learning, another is communication, another is creation. And in particular, he is going to come up with yet more money for several African countries, in particular Côte d'Ivoire, Senegal and Burkina Faso, to pump more money into teaching. So he's going to also be unveiling all sorts of initiatives whereby people can have more access to French language books, French language theatre. His whole idea really is that this is going to be something that's worthy for everyone to have. It's not going to be something that pulls them backwards. And when he looks at the figures, we've all seen them, that the great population growth, particularly in Africa, what he's looking at is, for example, by 2050, there will be over 700 million French speakers in the world, and of that, 80% will be in Africa. So he sees there's a population growth. He sees the need for people to speak really good French. And he really believes, this particular president, he believes in education. And it's not just education at university, it's education at the primary and nursery school level, which is why, in particular, for Côte d'Ivoire, Senegal, and Burkina Faso, he's talking about school books in nursery schools and in primary schools.
So is everyone on board with this, all French speakers?
Already, you've got the Franco-Congolese author, Alain Mabankin, who says that it needs to be more than this. He says that France needs to move on, prove that it's renounced colonialism, and you do more than just go around teaching everyone French. And he is one of many authors that says, fears this is a cover for, if you like, this sort of meddling in former colonies. You've also got some Cameroonian philosophers and other authors and scholars from Francophone Africa who say, it's just not enough. They're accusing France of being, if you like, paternalistic in their attitude to just wanting everyone to speak French. So it's not, it's not a speech that's going to be welcomed all around the world by a long shot. And there's a lot of people who are saying, haven't we just, got France away from these propping up of former dictators and authoritarian regimes around the world? Haven't we just now entered a world where other languages are being held up as just as valuable as the main languages?
Catherine Field in Paris, speaking with our colleague Paul Alexander. Malawi is rolling out a new community-based strategy to increase women's representation in the 2019 elections. Women currently hold just 15% of seats in parliament, and elected posts at the local government level are even more male-dominated. Lamik Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi hopes to increase female political participation in the 2019 elections by focusing on rural communities. Wisdom Chingwede is the communications specialist for the initiative called the 50-50 Campaign Management Agency.
This time around, the emphasis and the focus is looking at and ensuring that the structures in the village are involved in ensuring that women come on board, women stand, and women get voted into office come 2019.
The agency will partner with local NGOs and religious groups and use technology to support female candidates.
It's a simple tool where you call to a number and you listen to a recorded voice. You want information on any particular question, you'll be directed to trace whatever particular number just to make sure that you get that information based on the exact question that you have, on how you can campaign, on how you can plan the campaign, and what have you.
Malawi has long struggled to achieve equal representation in parliament. In 2014 elections, female legislative candidates won just 30 seats out of a total 193, down from 43 seats during 2009 elections. Aisha Mambo, a parliamentarian for Mango Chinkunguru constituency in southern Malawi, says female candidates lack the resources of their male competition, and she says efforts to help them in the past have backfired.
They gave us the very few tickets towards the end of the campaign period. Some of us did not distribute those tickets because instead of helping us, it was decampaigning us. Because the moment you give maybe 50 tickets to 50 people out of so many thousands, people were saying, no, let those who have received those tickets to go and vote for her since she doesn't want us.
She says female candidates also encounter discrimination.
Sometimes when you are campaigning, being a woman, people call you some different names, like you are a bitch and some other names. For myself, I didn't bother. They called me different names, but I didn't take it seriously. I just focused on what I want to achieve.
Vincent Kondowe is a political analyst in the capital, Lilongwe.
Achieving the 50-50 campaign for the 2019 elections is being overambitious and it is not attainable. Remember, Malawi, they are strongly held cultural beliefs and values that do not bestow leadership upon women. Now, to break these cultural traditions cannot happen within 2 years towards the election.
Kondowe and others say quotas would be a more effective way to improve gender parity, essentially opening up certain seats to women only. Last year, the government rejected a proposal by the Special Law Commission to reserve a seat in each of the country's 28 districts for female parliamentarians. Authorities argued the provision would require amending the constitution and electoral laws. The Malawi Electoral Commission is expected to launch the official campaign period for the 2019 polls next month. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Burundi's government has called for a referendum in May to remove presidential term limits. Opposition members have called for the vote to be free and fair, but they have their doubts. They say some of their members have already been arrested and mistreated for campaigning against the proposed constitutional amendment. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The referendum will be the second in 13 years since incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza took office in 2005. He's come under intense criticism in recent years for running for elections for three consecutive terms. Article 96 of the Constitution limits all presidents to two terms, but he says his first term in 2005 did not count, since he was named by parliament and not by direct vote. If approved, the referendum would essentially allow President Nkurunziza to run as many times as he likes, though not more than two consecutive terms. Nancy Mutoni is the spokesperson of the ruling party, CNDD-FDD. She explains the reason for the constitutional change.
The expectations of our party are the expectations of the people. And you know, this project is inspired mostly at the will of people. Our expectations is that the voice of the people be heard and their will expressed.
The spokesperson of the Independent Electoral Commission, Prosper Nahoramie, says that 5 million people are expected to participate in the May 17th vote. He says activities leading up to the referendum are going well and that soon voters' cards will be issued to the estimated 5 million people who are registered to vote. The government says it's not legal to begin campaigning for or against the constitutional reform. But the opposition says ruling party members are doing just that. Meanwhile, they say their own members are being harassed and jailed for voicing their views on the topic. Agathon Rwasa is an opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament. He supports the referendum, but only if the process is free and fair.
It really depends upon the people themselves to be aware of the consequences of their own vote. Because voting yes for that amendment means that Burundians themselves will have said, okay, we accept to be under the harsh dictatorship. But if Burundians need really democracy, they must reject it by voting no.
A political analyst in Burundi, who preferred not to reveal his name, said that the process to amend the constitution is not inclusive, since most opposition members now live outside the country.
There will be a group of people who will not be happy with that. I mean those who have been excluded from what they call consultations to reach the draft constitution to be soon brought to the referendum.
In 2015, President Nkurunziza said he would not serve beyond his third term. A year later, he said he might run again in 2020 if he has public support. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The world's last male white northern rhino has died in Kenya. Conservationists say his death underscores the urgent need to end illegal trade in rhino horn. Rael Ombor has the story from Nairobi.
The northern white rhino once roamed Africa in the hundreds, some say even in the thousands. The population is now down to two, with the species at risk of extinction. The last male northern white rhino named Sudan died Monday at the Olpajeta Conservancy in Kenya. He survived by two females, his daughter Najin and his granddaughter Fatu. Elodie Sampere is a manager at Olpajeta Conservancy. She spoke to VOA.
You know, he was suffering from old age conditions such as arthritis and a lack of mobility in his legs. You know, he was losing mobility in his legs. And we were treating him for all these things. And then, you know, it just got the best of him. And then on Sunday, he wasn't able to get up anymore. And, you know, once a rhino is unable to get up, that means they're unable to feed. So the decision was made to euthanize him. But in the end, you know, it was because his legs give up on him.
Sampere says there's hope of preserving the species.
They retrieved some of his genetic materials yesterday after he was dead. Okay. But then before that, there was some semen stored from Sudan. So we have a stored semen. The death of Sudan does not mean the death of the species. We still have two females that are there. And, you know, there's plan to do OPU in later this year, which basically means that we're going to retrieve the eggs from the female in the hope of creating embryos. So his death does not mean the end of the species.
She said the plan is to use a southern white rhino as a surrogate. Both Najin and Fatu suffer from medical conditions that prevent them from carrying pregnancies. Sudan's death comes amid efforts to curb rhino poaching. The London-based charity Save the Rhino says that in just a decade, more than 7,000 rhinos have been killed for their horns in Africa. All international trade in rhino horn is outlawed. However, consumer demand in Asia continues to fuel a black market. Olpajeta Conservancy says Sudan's death is a wake-up call.
If we as human beings are allowing the second biggest mammal on the planet to go extinct, what do you think that means for the bees and the frogs and every little organism on this planet? It means they have no chance, okay? So if this is not a wake-up call for the rest of the world, if this is not a wake-up call for Kenya, then we are doomed.
In addition to his ailments in old age, loneliness may have marked Sudan's final days at Olpajeta Conservancy. The only other male of his species, Suni, had died in 2014. Sudan spent his final year surrounded by armed guards who watched over him day and night to protect him from poachers. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. 25 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. More than a million people are displaced due to conflict in the Kasai province of the DRC. Malawi is rolling out a new community-based strategy to increase women's representation in the 2019 elections. And Burundi's government has called for a referendum in May to remove presidential term limits. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Cambridge Analytica, the data mining company, alleged to have used information from 50 million Facebook users to target ads ahead of the 2016 U.S. election, also has worked on campaigns in Africa. It consulted on at least three African elections in South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria. Its work in South Africa dates to 1994, just after apartheid ended. Last year, Cambridge Analytica worked with Kenya's ruling Jubilee Party to design a campaign strategy. Its parent company, SCL Group, also has extensive ties across Africa, working with non-governmental organizations and governments on projects related to health, food security, and development. In South Sudan, SCL worked with the United Nations Development Group to conduct a survey on the disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration program. This week, Cambridge Analytica is coming under scrutiny after a British television network aired video in which the company's staff appeared to describe smear tactics it could use against political candidates. Also, Facebook is under fire because Cambridge Analytica harvested and secretly used data from members of the social media site. Cambridge Analytica denies any wrongdoing. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Rex Tillerson's first official visit to Africa was also his last. He was ousted as U.S. Secretary of State just hours after returning to Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has tapped CIA Chief Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson as America's top diplomat. Tillerson's trip to Africa focused largely on China's growing influence on the continent. An in-depth discussion on what his abrupt exit means for U.S.-Africa policy on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.